Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. That was a weird game. That was a real weird one. The Oilers lose 3-2 in overtime in a weird game to the St. Louis Blues. Not the Oilers' best effort, Bruce, I will suggest. And not the Blues either in a lot of ways. I don't know. It just seemed like a weird...
The ice was terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. Just
ice was terrible.
This is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast with one conundrum. Bruce, what is your good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Oilers' first goal in this game. And what caught my eye here was that it was a virtual identical twin to a goal that they scored on Saturday against Anaheim, also in the first period. Also, a Matthias Ekholm slap shot from the left point that went through a screen by Matthias Janmark and in. But the whole prelude to the play on Saturday, it was two Oilers in the corner. Sam Carrick came out of the corner and up the left wing boards, right hand shot up the left wing boards. And he sort of moved it back above the hash marks and even above the ringette line. And then he found Ekholm in the middle of the ice with room and time to let fly. And tonight, Carrick was again involved, but this time he had the secondary assist. It was he who chipped it to Curtis Brown, another Connor. Right shot. Sorry, Connor Brown. Curtis Brown. Boy, where'd that come from? Buffalo Sabre of about 30 years ago. Anyway, Connor Brown, I just saw C. Brown on here and had a complete brain cramp. Connor Brown came up the left boards in almost identical fashion, just sort of slow motion, stick handling away from the net and controlling the puck and considering his options. And he too found the best option being Ekholm at the just inside the left point. And he fed Ekholm and the same exact result occurred. And man, those goals were very close to mirror images. Both Californians and both fourth line goals, won by grinding the boards, by controlling the puck, and by making a patient, safe play that can result in good things and not any bad things, as opposed to risky play. There was no risks taken on any of that. The Oilers were in full possession the entire time, and they wound up setting up a low percentage shot, but with a guy screening in front, good things can happen, especially if you're Matthias Ekholm just now.
Yeah, if he keeps shooting it like that, Bruce, we're going to have to come up with a nickname, like at the Bush Bomb. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Eckhammer.
Eckhammer, that's good.
The Eckhammer.
Thor's hammer, yeah.
There you go. You can't do enough with that Viking mythology when you're talking about a Swedish player.
Especially not this Swedish player. My goodness.
He looks like he was cast for a battle scene in the show Vikings, for sure. Matthias Lothbrok. Yeah, that was a heck of a goal. And what a screen by Janmark. He's fighting hard to stick in the lineup, Matthias Janmark. Mm-hmm. That was a great play.
I'm liking this game again.
Connor Brown made a really nice play. I think he did. He won the board battle, I think, to start it off.
Well, he made the play. He batted the puck down on the shoot around to keep possession. And then he worked it back behind the net to Carrick.
There you go.
And a few seconds later, Carrick got it back to him.
Yeah.
And, there might have been a couple seconds in there where neither team really had possession, but it was because of Brown that the puck was in the zone at all. And then it was he who got the primary assist with a good handle and teeing it up.
Bruce, my good thing is Connor McDavid finally coming to life in this game. And this is a rare thing that Connor McDavid doesn't have his game legs, but tonight he did not. He was super duper quiet for the first half of the game. And about 7 minutes left in the second period, they finally put Hyman, Draisaitl, and McDavid line together. And they had a good shift. Then he was pretty quiet again. But man, did he make a couple great plays late in the third period, one of them tying the game. I just want to find the first play on our, I can't find it on our scoring chance document. Because before the goal, he actually, this was the play. He won the puck in the, in his own zone, stole the puck, charged up ice, passed it to Ekholm, and Ekholm slammed it into Hyman. And Hyman almost scored right there. It was a really great tip shot by Hyman. Hard stick on the ice. Does he ever set an example of how to go to the net, Zach Hyman, by the way? Just with how he just is so strong on a stick. Hyman, I thought, was the Oilers' best forward tonight. But a moment later, McDavid on the Draisaitl shoots it in. And McDavid just charges in there. And this is the second time in a couple of weeks where he's done this, where he's charged in and won the puck on the boards. And then centered the pass like that. So on the forecheck, on a shoot-in, Connor McDavid is super dangerous because of his speed and size and aggression. He is a fierce forechecker when he wants to be. And he made an absolutely brilliant pass to Draisaitl, who just smoked it in the net. It wasn't... Under the circumstances, I wouldn't say he single-handedly got the Oilers a point in that game, but they weren't getting a point if he didn't make that play. So he made the play in crunch time in a key moment. It was a fantastic, absolutely fantastic play. And that's Connor McDavid.
Yeah, he set up a goal in a recent game on a similar play where Draisaitl, again, deliberately fired a hard shoot around into the corner that he knew McDavid was streaking into. And again, that time McDavid went into that corner, engaged the opponent's stick at just the right millisecond to lift his stick, and then was somehow able to then drag his own stick back and pull the puck right off out of the boards and come away with a clean possession. Just a gorgeous play. And then this was the same thing tonight, but at a higher speed. Again, McDavid was flying in there and lifted the guy's stick, but this puck was just rattling around the boards. It wasn't like sliding around on the ice where he had to knock it down out of the air and somehow came out of it with full control and then pulled it from forehand to backhand and slid the perfect feed across for Draisaitl to bear. It was just a sensational play by McDavid. Like you say, kind of out of nowhere in the sense that he hadn't had a real big impact on this game. But the Oilers a standings point with that play.
Yeah. The only thing missing in McDavid's forecheck was the blaring of the Stuka siren as he descended upon his prey. I mean, he's just a dive bomber coming in there. Like, it must be so frightening to be that defenseman or that forward, whatever it is, on the boards trying to just. And I was recalling the same play, Bruce, where he did that earlier. Do you remember which team it was against? I can't remember.
I'm thinking it was the Buffalo game, but I'm trying to find the exact scoring play. It was.
Oh, you're ruffling through your paper.
McDavid and
rustling through your papers. There, yeah.
Yeah, it was McDavid and Draisaitl with the assists in that order. I think it might have been Hyman. Anyway, pretty good chance.
Bruce, what is your bad thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the game losing goal against in overtime. And the Oilers had actually had pretty good play in overtime up until this moment. And this was their third shift, and they had put out Ryan McLeod with Ekholm, and I'm trying to remember who the other forward was. He had changed by the time the disaster happened. And it was, I know some people are crapping all over Ryan McLeod, and I think that's really harsh.
It was a tough battle for him to win.
Yeah. Well, he came back on the guy. The guy broke out over the St. Louis blue line on the diagonal, and McLeod kind of came back to him and closed the guy off on the boards right in front of the St. Louis bench, And he chipped the puck back to Ekholm, or so he thought. And at just the moment that he chipped the puck back to Ekholm, he just sort of reached out and just chipped it, one hand on his stick, back to where he thought the D-man was. Two things happened. Ekholm anticipated something different than what happened, and he started to jump up the ice, and the puck went right by him. And the other thing that happened was St. Louis was making a line change, and the game-winning goal scorer jumped over the board. Like, he wasn't even in the picture when McLeod made that pass, and all of a sudden there's a guy coming over the boards to take the puck, go in on a breakaway, and you know, have a clean look and deke and score on Stu Skinner, who I thought could have done a little better on that one, frankly. After this, he made some good saves in this game, but his counterpart stopped breakaways, and Stu just didn't on that play. It just went right through him. But it was just sort of a mishap or a mishappenstance, as opposed to a real bad blunder. Other than, I guess you could say, Ekholm, he zigged when he should have zagged. He anticipated one thing, and he thought the puck was just going to come free there, and he was going to jump on it, and McLeod chipped it just as he moved. And, you know, if you want to blame that on McLeod, well, you are a tough marker, and I would suggest not a very fair one.
Well, I do blame him, Bruce, but I don't blame him. He was part of the thing, right?
That went wrong.
Yeah.
And it went wrong because he won the battle, but he chipped the puck to the wrong place, and things went sideways.
Yeah. He lost the battle on the boards, but it shouldn't have been catastrophic, because there's a defenseman back.
Yeah.
And the defenseman should have been back. And it was one of the many terrible reads by defensemen in this game. Most of them, I will suggest, by Darnell Nurse, who led the team with six shots, but not one of them dangerous. But it's not his offensive play. Like, Nurse had some good moments in this game. I'm not saying he didn't. But especially early in the game, Bruce, he was just again and again and again over-aggressive, too high up on the play, and causing either grade-A shots against or dangerous chances against. And there was one dangerous goalmouth scramble that he was involved in. There was a two-on-one that he caused. He's just, when Nurse is off his game, it's the same thing again and again and again. He's overly aggressive in the neutral zone and at the blue line, and gets way out of position and causes grade A shots against. And he did this too many times in this game. And it's really not acceptable, like, seriously, at this stage of his career. But it happens. It's his game. It's how he plays it. And hopefully, you know, when he's on his game, he makes up for it with a lot of good plays. Not tonight. Evan Bouchard also had some major, major gaffes. And on the second goal, he bobbled the puck at the blue line, trying to make a play, keep it in. And he was unable to keep it in, and it led to a two-on-one. And second St. Louis goal, big goal for St. Louis. He followed that up with two more bad plays in the third period. He broke his stick trying to stop Jake Neighbors coming in. And then I think after that, there was another one. So he also had his fair share of mistakes this game. He had more on the good side, though, than Nurse. Neither of them covered themselves in glory this game. What is your number, Bruce?
If you look at just the stats of the two players, you know, they were pretty good. Like 70% shot attempts for Nurse, and 63% shots, and 61% expected goals, and no goals against at 5-on-5. But a couple of 10 bell errors, as you say, including an odd man rush that occurred because he was way up in the other zone. And Bouchard might as well have been a saloon door in the third period. He just got badly beaten for several odd man rushes. The pass, pulled past Draisaitl out over the line where St. Louis Tempest comes tearing down on a 2-on-1. Like, you know, this is a combination of a bad decision plus bad execution. And that is a bad formula for success in any walk of life. if you're going to make that decision, you better make the play. And he pulled it past Leon, and jailbreak was on anyway. And Bush is mostly playing good, and he made a great play in the game, but he was a little bit, what's the word, on the back end, vulnerable. I'll go with that.
Crappy. All right. Yeah. To be polite, high event.
Swiss cheese. He was speedable.
He was leaky. Yeah. All right.
That's good.
What's your number, Bruce?
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with Mattias Ekholm. Last 22 games played, 5 goals, 17 assists, 22 points. A point a game for over a quarter of the season. And these include 0 points on the power play. 0 points on the power play. And every single one of those 22 points in 22 games at 5v5. It's incredible. And plus 25 over that same span of games, even after the minus one he took at the end of this one, he still had another plus game tonight. And that's sort of pretty routine for the Swede to come out on the plus side of the ledger. And time and again, anyway, just a remarkable offensive run. I just did not, I love the player. I did not see him having a stretch where he'd be scoring a point a game for any extended period. Because he doesn't play on the first power play.
I had no idea that he was could sling the puck around like he's doing and fire the puck. Like I thought he was going to be like a Tanev kind of player, mm-hmm. you know, like Cody CC plus. Mm-hmm. This is way beyond any expectation. And he is the number one left side defenseman on the Oilers, and I mean he's really lucky to have him. And yeah. he gives him a real shot in the playoffs, having a guy like him on the team. Bruce, my number is a series of 2-0s in this weird game, and this is where it gets to be a weird game. So the first 2-0 is the Oilers had more grade A shots on the penalty kill for them than they had on the power play. They had 2-0, not on the power, no grade A shots in the power play, 2 on the penalty kill. Nuge went in for 1, and Connor Brown set up Mattias Janmark mm-hmm. on the second, which was a really good play. The other one more 2-0. Edmund had two obvious clearances on the goal line, where it looked like defensemen saved goals against, including Evan Bouchard, who we were criticizing, and Cody Ceci. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the Blues have any of those particular plays, although Binnington kind of got lucky on the goal line a few times. But and the final 2-0.
Horseshoes, man.
Yeah. The final 2-0 is Edmonton had 2 goals called back on video review, and St. Louis not 1, even though there are some people claiming they have the Zapruder film, which proves that St. Louis should have had their goal called back as well. Bruce, I think, and I don't know about the St. Louis goal. I haven't seen the image of which suggests that he got torpedoed by the Russian player Torpedo, but with Torpedo's stick. But I don't know why Hyman's goal was called, or Nugent Hopkins's goal was called back. Hyman went by the goalie. He actually got his stick and got a grade A shot on net, and he was mm-hmm. going for the rebound, which is allowed. Mm-hmm. And he did make contact with the goalie, but he didn't budge the goalie. He didn't open his legs. He didn't can opener him. He mm-hmm. didn't push him back. He didn't move his stick. He did nothing. Mm-hmm. Binnington was in the same position after Hyman touched him as before, and then Nuge put in the shot. Binnington just missed the rebound. That should have been a goal, and it was very frustrating to me, at least, I think to many fans, obviously, that it wasn't.
Yeah, well, some are claiming that Hyman just basically ran right into him. I thought he did his level best to skirt around the outside of Binnington. He was in the crease legitimately because the puck was there. In fact, he made the shot, and he was going for the rebound. And I think he might have whacked Binnington a little bit with his follow-through on the shot, which... and follow through. They're legal if you high stick some guy, but apparently you're not allowed to touch Binnington. And anyway, the best angle of this one for me was the reverse angle, in that Hyman, after he went past the goalie altogether and was all the way to the end boards, Binnington was in perfect position facing Nugent's shot. He had his knees together, his pads played to either side, and he guessed, and he opened up, and Nugent shoved the puck through his legs. And it had nothing to do with Hyman's stick opening up, nothing whatsoever with Hyman's stick opening up. That is not what happened. And yet, apparently, according to the NHL war room, after about a 27-minute review, they finally went, oh, yeah, the Zach Hyman rule, let's call that. That was lame. If you're not going to allow contact that incidental, you might as well be playing, you know, you might as well put up, you know, bars around the crease that nobody's allowed to pursue the play in there. Like,
anyway. Remember that play against LA in the playoffs a few years ago where the LA King player just rammed into the Oilers goalie and put the puck in the net that way? Was it Kempe? I can't remember who it was, but one of the Kings just absolutely smashed into the goalie and put the puck in that way, and they counted it.
I still remember the one where Milan Lucic as a King, so this is 2014-15, skated in from behind and slew-footed basically Laurent Brossoit, who was covering a shot from the side, knocked him over on his side. The puck was alive. Brossoit is lying there trying to front the puck, and the guy gets the puck on the side and he shoots it into the top of the net, and the refs say, well, he had time to recover and get set. Brossoit said, the minute I move to try and recover, they're shooting the puck along the ice and into the net. But apparently that kind of contact with the goalie is fine. I mean, Lucic should have got a freaking penalty on the play. Instead, they got a goal. Still mad about it. But that's kind of the standard. You know, the league does one thing on one, and they do something completely different on the next one. And it is just so... And I'd be particularly incensed if I was a gambler who'd bet on this game, because I don't think they got a fair shake, the ones that were betting on the Oilers, with the way these two calls went. And I know you're going to talk about the other one.
Well, the other one is the Kane goal.
Oh.
And although the Kane goal, I thought, was probably the right call. I mean, he did have the stick fairly high up, and maybe above his shoulders, maybe definitely above the goalpost. So
above the crossbar.
Yeah, above the crossbar. I wasn't quite sure on that. Bruce, I don't know what to say. Like, I thought initially that the one the Oilers did the coaches' challenges on, I thought he did lift Skinner's stick, but on the one, I didn't see a replay where that was clear that he lifted Skinner's stick. And you're saying there's a replay from above, or a shot from above? Well,
there's a still from above that shows where the St. Louis's players shoved his stick into Skinner's pad to the degree that the stick is flexed. And, you know, a great big curve flex like he's firing a wrist shot. And so you know that he's pushing something, or the stick wouldn't do that. And it happened to be Skinner's right pad, which is the pad he was trying to move to make the save. But no, that's not goalie interference. It's a penalty on Edmonton, because that's fair.
I can't say. I didn't.
Well, there was two cheap ones. They should have called them both the same at minimum.
Yeah.
I think Edmonton has a good case on both. And they didn't get the call on either.
You'd unbiased.
Now, the Kane one, the one thing I wondered about the Kane one was the tick was definitely above the crossbar, not definitely above his shoulder, and it bounced down and hit his skate and went in. So it's not like he deflected it straight in from a high stick, but I think they rule any deflection, if his puck sort of bounces around and goes in, that they use the crossbar as the guide. So poor Kane. Poor Nuge. They can't buy a friggin' goal right now, either one of those guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bruce, here's my conundrum. I don't know if it's much of a conundrum, and maybe I'm just raising this because I'm a Connor Brown fan. But I thought he was good tonight. And buzzing around, making plays. When is he going to get a chance again? Will he ever again get a chance in the top six? Like, Corey Perry keeps getting bumped up there. Mm-hmm. But Connor Brown hasn't for some time. Since the start of the year, I'd like to see Connor Brown in that role, because he like, I thought the line with Perry, Henrique, and Draisaitl, I don't think it's going to work. I think Leon, like, to give Leon space, you need at least one fast guy out there, really fast guy. Fogle does it, but could be Connor Brown, like someone who just drives the play, pushes the defense back, then creates room. I don't mind Henrique and Draisaitl together. I think that might work. I think Fogle's probably the right guy there. But why not try Connor Brown there? What do you think? Is that a conundrum or is that just obvious why you wouldn't?
Well, they tried him everywhere up until recently, but, you know, he certainly played his best hockey in the last little while, you know, when he finally got off the schneid with that goal against Washington just, you know, a couple of weeks ago. And he's got, you know, like, I think 5 points since then.
Yeah.
And mostly playing, well, all of it playing near the bottom of the lineup, right? He's fourth or third line at best, usually fourth. And they did, I mean, they did do this wrinkle tonight where they switched off Fogle and Perry and gave each of the second and third lines a bit of a different look. And, I mean, we'd seen, certainly before, we'd seen McLeod between Fogle and Kane occasionally earlier this year. The idea of Henrique and Perry surrounding Draisaitl is it's an interesting one. I mean, these are two veterans with multiple 20-goal seasons under their belt. But their best years are behind, certainly Perry's. And I'm not sure he has the speed to play that far up the lineup, nor necessarily is he going to be effective for the number of minutes that a top six line typically gets. But I don't mind them trying different stuff, and maybe the next time different stuff is giving Connor Brown a look up there. I mean, they're just seeing what they got, and thing is, you get into the playoffs and you don't know what's going to happen, right? So the more things that you know either might work or you know don't work, the better informed you are going into to playoff games. If you want to switch something up during the game, or, you know, somebody leaves the game and you got to make new lines within it, anything like that, the more information that you have on your players. And these games at this point that are, I won't call them meaningless games, but, you know, the fact the Oilers got 1 point out of this game and not two, it's not exactly a catastrophe, right? It's just they tried some stuff. They didn't get very lucky a couple times. They didn't get any calls, and they still got a point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Perry went to the Stanley Cup Finals with three different teams, Dallas, Montreal, and Tampa. He was always a fourth-line player. And I think, as far as I know, I don't think he played up the lineup very much in any of those situations. I think he's a really solid, at most, third-line, probably fourth-line player. That's where you're going to get your most out of Corey Perry. Mm-hmm. Brown, we'll see. I mean, there's a chance that he could still, if he's coming on, he's playing good. He's making plays, playing with more confidence. I wouldn't mind seeing him with Draisaitl. And he's a responsible two-way hockey player. And Henrique, I like Henrique's game. I know he's not flashy, but he got a really wicked shot on net tonight.
Sure did.
And he got he's unlucky not to score on that one. And he made a nice play on the shorthanded goal for Nugent Hopkins, just driving hard to the net. So he's a smart player. He's a good player. And I think he can play with Draisaitl. So they're looking for that other guy. Warren Fogle scores like a top-line NHL winger. I think he's like in the top 60 at even strength point scoring per 60. For some reason, that's not enough to keep him in the top six on the Oilers. But I always find that mystifying. But if you're going to have a third line with Fogle and McLeod on it, that's going to generally, they didn't get much done tonight, but that's going to probably be a pretty good third line. So I don't mind that either if they do decide to play Fogle and McLeod, but they got to find someone with some speed to go with Leon if that second line's going to work. And could be Connor Brown. Probably not, but it could be.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I like Cody Ceci's game tonight. He made the play, goal line play that you talked about, but
yeah,
he didn't give up much.
He was pretty solid.
He was playing poor for quite a while there, and I think he's played two or three of his better games in the last week or 10 days that we've seen in a while, but this was one.
All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. The next game is Dallas. What night is that, Wednesday?
Wednesday at 7:52 Mountain Time, 8:52 Central Time. Dallas gets the joys of one of these Wednesday night doubleheaders where the second game starts late, whether they want it to or not.
All right.
That'll be a big test. The Oilers at Dallas earlier this year was one of the best games of the season.
They're obviously a very good team. All right, Bruce, we'll talk then. Thanks for talking tonight.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.